attention, please.
This is The Drive with Josh Graham podcast. Tune into The Drive 3 until 6 p.m. weekdays on the Sports Hub.
I love it. It's brilliant.
We've got something very special planned for all of this week. But before we tell you about that, for the second summer in a row, the Los Angeles Lakers believe they're contenders. Usually in the NBA, if you get the star, you win the trade. It really doesn't matter what you give up in order to make that happen. However, I feel like the circumstances here regarding the Pelicans, Anthony Davis, and the Lakers feels a little bit different. Namely for two reasons. Number one, when I evaluate blockbuster trades in any sport, I'm looking to see what franchise is better set up to be successful for a long period of time versus the short term. Usually when a star leaves, it's hard to monitor and determine how a team's going to be better in the near term than when they were with the all-star in place. But that leads me to reason number two why this is different. The Pelicans will be drafting the most highly touted player since LeBron James later this week. So with all that being said, I think both teams got what they wanted, and both teams will benefit greatly here. But the Pelicans won this trade. I take New Orleans' next 10 years over the Lakers' next 10 years because I would take the 10 years plus I'm going to get of Zion Williamson with a good supporting cast all throughout the next 10 years, it seems like, probably more, versus a three-year run with LeBron James, somebody who's 34, going to turn 35 in December, and has just 3 years left on his deal. I'm going to take the Pelicans' next 10, because the first thing I thought of, if I'm going to be honest with you, Dez, the combo of Lonzo and Zion Williamson, how exciting is that going to be? I'm not going to call it Lob City 2.0 yet, but when you're talking about point guards coming into a draft, Lonzo possessed a rare skill set you see for young players when it comes to passing. Ben Simmons had a little bit of that. Lonzo certainly had it. A unique passing gene. That, with Zion, seems like it's going to be a great fit. The other thing Lonzo's very good at is defense. So you have Lonzo and you have Drew Holiday, who's already one of the best defensive guards in the NBA, a good combo guard. With Zion, it seems like that is a match made in heaven. When you just look at Zion and Lonzo Ball together, how exciting do you think that piece of it is here?
Well, it depends on how available Lonzo is. You know, your best ability is availability, and he's missed 60-plus games in 2 years as a L.A. Laker. So, I mean, if he's healthy, then yeah. I mean, that's something really, you know, great to look forward to for the Pelicans.
I'm pro Lonzo Ball. I'm actually more concerned about the injuries of Brandon Ingram. I think he's the biggest wild card of the bunch because when you start talking about blood clots and stuff, my brain immediately goes to Chris Bosh and things quickly fell apart there. Also, when you have Drew Holiday and Lonzo Ball, who are ball handlers in place, Brandon Ingram, somebody who's going to want to demand the basketball quite a bit. And when Zion Williamson is playing some small ball likely as a smaller center, I'm interested to see how that works. But I think there are a lot of exciting possibilities in place. When it comes to the Lakers, I just don't think they're finished yet. Most teams aren't finished yet at this point. We haven't even hit the draft. We haven't gotten the free agency. We don't know if the trade cycle's complete either. I don't trust Rob Pelinka and the Lakers to get this right. They've been one of the worst ran franchises in the NBA, maybe all of sports, the last 10 years. The only team that I think's been worse, the New York Knicks. This isn't enough to win the Western Conference, I think, right now. Because under contract, you literally have Davis, when the trade is complete, LeBron James, Kyle Kuzma. Then you have some younger players that you drafted, a second rounder from a year ago, Mo Wagner. That's all that's in place because you signed all those one-year deals last year. So they're likely going to have around $23 million to play with. Everybody's just assuming Anthony Davis is going to waive a $4 million trade kicker. That could happen. Players have given away money to be more competitive. I'm just not going to go ahead and assume that because that's not my cash. We always love giving away money that isn't ours. Oh yeah, of course he's going to waive the $4 million trade kicker. I don't know that for certain, but I do know the Lakers have faced a lot of bad press the last few months, rightfully so. You acquired the best player in the sport. You didn't make the playoffs. And the mess with Pelinka and Magic all made Pelinka look bad, and he's the only one left standing right now, and he's the one in charge here. So I don't know exactly what the next move's going to be. I expect they're going to chase stars again and try to fill the rest of that cap with either a Kyrie Irving or a D'Angelo Russell or Tobias Harris or a Jimmy Butler. But I feel like AD and LeBron, that's enough star power to get you started. You need ancillary pieces. You need more shooters. And I think it needs to be more than one body because I doubt it's going to be Kemba Walker, even though that was reported by Mark Stein of the New York Times this past weekend. I wouldn't deal with the headaches of D'Angelo Russell coming back to Los Angeles, Kyrie Irving the same way, Jimmy Butler that way. And I think if you give Tobias Harris what's left of your cap, you're going to be overspending to do that. I'd much rather go re-signing Rajon Rondo. Great connection he had with Anthony Davis. They worked really well together. And reportedly, LeBron likes Rondo. Maybe bring in a cheaper player like Austin Rivers. Bring in guards who are free agents like Seth Curry or Danny Green or J.J. Redick. I'd much rather have two or three of those guys and give veteran minimums to JaVale McGee, players of that sort, or Lance Stephenson, more than go all in and try to get a Kyrie Irving. I don't think that's the best way to maximize, but I bet you that's where Rob Pelinka's headed here. Yes, Des.
So a lot of people in the Triad know that, you know, I'm a fan of different teams. You know, I've never really held it a secret. I'm a big Tar Heel fan. I'm a Hornets fan. I'm a Panther fan. The Lakers are my first love. The Lakers were the first team that I can even remember falling in love with as a kid. The Showtime Lakers, Magic, Kareem, Big Game James, Byron Scott, all those guys. That's part of the reason why I hate Boston so much to this day is because I grew up being a Laker fan. And I just find it funny that people forget how the Lakers have done this for 55, 60 years. They have literally, this whole idea that they were giving up all these assets that they had gained over the past 4 or 5 years and the draft and stuff like that, that's not what the Lakers do. They've never done it that way, really. It's always been go get the best big man in the game through free agency or trade. You put a guard with him or someone that can handle the rock and get it to him, and you feed that big man, and they ride it to a title.
Right, but the NBA has changed.
Not really.
It has, because that used to be the way of thinking. The last time the Los Angeles Lakers were good, like when the Lakers won their last few titles, teams were still trying to build around the center, build around Dwight Howard, and build around Andre Drummond. Then the league changed.
The league's a lot different now. Certain teams changed and got good at what they were doing, and other teams are trying to duplicate what that one team did well. But what they're understanding is you can't duplicate it unless you have Steph Curry in your lineup. Like, you can try to shoot 43s a game if you want to, but that's not going to beat Golden State at that game. Going centers, getting it in the paint, that's never going to go out of style. It's like running in football. It'll never go out of style. It might be out of cycle, but it always comes back. And I would expect the Lakers to be that team that brings it back. And AD's the best guy to do it with. He's the best center in the league.
I don't know if that is so. The best teams in the league have been the ones that have been three-point centric. Even though the Rockets never beat Golden State, it was because Golden State was better at doing what Houston was trying to do, but Houston beat everybody else too. Even the teams who were trying to pound it in the paint.
Well, they did have a league MVP playing on the starting
five. Who was not a center.
That may be true. But as we get to April and May, the proof starts getting in the pudding. And we just watched Toronto mid-range shot Golden State to death in the paint with Kawhi Leonard getting in there, their wings getting in there. They didn't settle for three. So this idea that everybody in the league is going to three-point shooting first, I don't buy
that. The reason Toronto beat Golden State was because they shot a higher percentage from three than Golden State did in the series.
The teams that won in that series were the teams that hit more threes than the other
team. Right.
Yeah.
Toronto. So to say Toronto won because they were mid-ranging the hell out of Golden State, no, they attempted more threes than Golden State, and they made more threes than Golden State. That's how Toronto won.
But if they
I don't think that's going out of style. I don't think we're going back to the Shaq ages and going back to where Kareem and Wilt Chamberlain were playing. I think the NBA has changed, and we're not going back to the paint. You're going beyond it.
So you think any team, forget the name Lakers, any team that has two top five NBA players on it, you're not giving them a puncher's chance?
No. I'm saying that the Lakers got better, and they're going to be a team that's a contender. But to make the leap already and say that this team, as it's currently constituted, is the favorite in the NBA, I think might be a little bit too far of a stretch right now. But then again, we still have free agency. We still have the draft. There's a lot of time between now and October. Here's a fun thing we're doing this week. Joe Weil, every single week, gives us movie lines or integrates movie lines we throw at him into his Winston-Salem Dash broadcast that airs on this station on Thursday nights. Now, we've accrued a number of these, so much that we can't do this all in one day. So every single day this week, we're going to have a volume of Joe Weil calls since the first half concluded yesterday for the Dash's season. The first half ended. So what we're going to do, we're going to play volume one of Joe Weil's baseball calls here in the first half of the season. Then we got to figure out which of these are the best. We'll put out a poll. We'll vote on that. That will be today's winner. We'll do that the next 4 days, and then those four will go head-to-head on Friday. But before we get to all the small details, let's get to volume one of Joe Weil's work from the first half of the season.
The control issues do not get figured out for the Frederick Keys. It'll be a long night. But seven walks on the night for the Frederick Keys, and if they're just staring at the walks right now, figuratively, they're just saying, I wish I knew how to quit you. The 3-0, way inside for ball four. And it's off of John Carrillo's right leg. It's just a flesh wound. Right-hander against right-hander, the pitch. Blackman takes a strike on the outside corner.
Yeah.
And Blackman was in love with the ballpark. Speaking before he even played in a game. We're talking about practice, not a game. We're talking about practice. And Tate Blackman was already marveling at this ballpark. And Park, in turn, with their offer of being a starter, 0-2. Outside count at 1-2. Yesenia said back to him, I'm your Huckleberry. Because he's up to the task. Nick Racquet has to be thinking to himself, I made a good pitch on Blackman. I could have been out of this inning, but you can't complain about plays like that at center field. There's no crying in baseball. Tonight, 9 hits, 5 runs. It's almost as if Dash hitting coach Jamie Dismuke is telling his offense, you're so money, baby, you don't even know it. And JJ, with his 65-mile-per-hour fastball against the bottom of the order, struck out back-to-back. Potomac had to be saying, holy smokes, he's cooking our garbage.
Excellent work by Joe. Let us know which of those you found most funny. Message us on Facebook. Also find us on Twitter, at SportsHubTriad. We'll narrow it down to 4 and vote on it a little bit later on in the program. Great stuff. I forgot about that swingers line. Coming up, why Tyson Fury is the worst. This is The Drive.
What are you guys talking about?
Talk.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham, the Sports Hub, at AM 600, AM 920.
So Anthony Davis, the Lakers, and Gary Woodland are dominating today's news cycle today. But I believe there are 3 other moments in sports you may have missed that I would say are the best from among the weekend. Interesting things happening earlier today. Kobe White put out a Players Tribune story talking about his father. That was a very neat thing. I'm sure we will hear a lot more about Kobe White in the next few days as the country and the NBA community begin to learn what we've gotten to know about Coby White the last year or so. I just retweeted a video of Coby White working out with the Washington Wizards. He's standing right next to the owner of the Wizards, Ted Leonsis, and all he's doing is cheering on his fellow North Carolina teammate, Nasir Little, as he's finishing a workout, finishing some sprints up. Pretty neat to see that from Coby, who's just a stand-up guy, getting to know him the last year or so. But the moments that I pinpointed having to talk about the day from the last 72 hours or so starts with U.S. women's soccer. Carly Lloyd is a firecracker. That's the best way to put it. Not talking about her looks. I'm talking about her personality, her leadership, the way that she plays. In 7 straight World Cup matches, she's scored at least a goal. I think it might actually be multiple goals that she's scored. She had 2 more yesterday. The United States were was just crushing Chile, who couldn't even control the ball. The entire team looked like a bunch of teenagers facing the U.S. women. I thought we were on pace to another blowout. Maybe not as bad as the Thailand match, but something comparable. But the biggest headline that saw U.S. 13, Thailand 0 from last week was the way the United States celebrated their goals. You're up by 9-10 goals, and you're celebrating as if you just won the World Cup, as if you just won a big match. It was a game winner, a significant goal. Megan Rapinoe sliding down to the field. Alex Morgan counting 5 goals on her hand as she went on to score 5. Carly Lloyd scores to make it 1-0 U.S. And what does she do? She does a polite golf clap. I can't think of a better way to troll anybody, troll the people who are saying you're celebrating too much, than to do a golf clap as you're scoring your first goal. So I give her all the points there. Brett Hull, he made the headlines because he was in a victory parade for the St. Louis Blues. We probably could add to this audio list later today if we get all the audio from the Toronto Raptors parade today. Kawhi Leonard smoking a cigar right next to Drake. Kyle Lowry wearing a throwback Raptors jersey that has the purple dinosaur on it. But Brett Hull was the highlight of the Blues victory parade. He is holding a beer as he approached the microphone. And much like Tyson Fury singing after his knockout win, this probably wasn't the best play. This is from the Blues victory parade. This is Blues great Brett Hull.
And they are the champions. Glory, Gloria. 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 I think I got your number. Gloria.
Is that DMX's Party Up playing in the background there?
It is. So it's the weirdest sound clip we'll probably have today. If that's the sound bed underneath him trying to sing Gloria. With a beer bottle in hand, so it gives you a little context on him.
He was having a nice time. It's like Alex Ovechkin last year, cursing into the microphone, yelling out obscenities in between winning a championship, we're not going to suck next year, all that. Brett Hull, man, how many drinks do you think he was in? Let me hear the back end of this one more time. I think his voice will tell us how much alcohol he's had.
I think I got your number, Gloria.
Yeah.
I love how if you're watching the clip, when he gets to this part.
I think I got your number.
Watch the cheerleaders in the background.
Oh, no.
They like their eyes kind of go like big, like, oh, no.
Oh, no. This isn't great.
Yeah.
This is not awesome.
It's simultaneous. Like there's 5 of them behind him.
This is how I picture it. That last piece right there. This is the line that was left out of Good Will Hunting when he walks up to the guy, the jerk guy with the long locks. Will Hunting walks up to the window and he had a message for him.
I think I got your number.
Yeah. You like apples? Because
I think I got your number.
How do you like them apples?
He sounds about, I couldn't tell the type of beer he was holding. It was a dark bottle. He sounded about
That's a dozen.
Kind of heavy set guy, doing some beer math. At least about 7-8 in, probably, at that point. Although it was broad daylight, middle of the day.
But you don't win a championship that often.
Yeah, and
there's a victory parade. This sounds like the guy. It sounds a little bit like Tyson Fury, but just more drunk, more slurred words. This sounds like the guy who goes to karaoke feeling very confident in himself.
Glory, glory,
yeah. He's pictured it in his head. I'm Brett Hull. I'm going to start singing, and everybody's going to love it. Why? Because I'm Brett Hull, and I can sing good.
Glory, glory, yeah.
There's no way this is going to backfire on me.
I love it when people try to sing that can't sing, and they try to do the thing like they're carrying a note, and it's the same note.
The problem Tyson Fury had was that he wasn't a terrible singer, but he was just trying too hard.
He was joyful.
It's all about, no, it's about song choice, right? Like, if you go to a karaoke bar, song choice is everything. You better be the best singer there is if you're going to try and sing Steven Tyler. You better be one of the best singers if you're going to attack Whitney Houston.
Mm.
The best play, if you're an okay singer, is just to pick a song that everybody likes. Let's go out there and sing one that's right in your range, right in your wheelhouse that everybody can sing along to. So let's go with a Gloria or something of that sort.
Or like Wonderwall, Oasis. Everybody
Wonderwall.
Knows that song. Yeah.
Everybody's going to sing Wonderwall.
So then it turns, instead of you being up there by yourself,
exactly.
Everybody starts singing it. I see the logic.
I remember there, Josh Graham. I sounded like Brett Hull here.
Gloria! Gloria! I think I got your number!
I've never admitted this before. Oftentimes I'm on the air and I admit things I've never told anybody.
Often.
Yeah, this happens from time to time. I remember this had to be 7 or 8 years ago. I was in downtown Raleigh and I was sounding like Brett Hull here. I was sounding a little slurred.
Glory, glory, yeah.
But I was smart enough not to attack Gloria or anything like that. I did Sweet Caroline. Everybody like Sweet Caroline. I'm in a pub in downtown Raleigh. Julius Hodge walks into the bar/restaurant where we were at. When he walked in, I recognized him. It was right before the last chorus. I said, hey, Julius Hodge, sing it with us.
And I think I got your number.
Yeah. So it was kind of like that. Hey, Julius Hodge.
Gloria.
sing along with me, Julius Hodge.
Glory, Gloria.
And he gave me the full nah.
How many,
waved me off.
How many beers were you in by the time you got up there?
It was one and a half.
One and a half. One and a half.
Times
barrels or
about six.
Okay. I don't
That's
go
where
near.
We were. Julius Hodge did not sing Sweet Caroline with me.
I love the fact that you mentioned Whitney, because when me and my wife used to be huge American Idol fans when it was really good back in the day, and we had like a list of artists that people should not try to attempt on the auditions,
who
and Whitney was there.
Who was your all-time favorite American Idol singer?
Either Fantasia, shout out to High Point, or Ruben Studdard.
See, I was all in on Clay that season.
See?
Clay Aiken.
That doesn't surprise
Kelly
me.
Pickler.
Kelly Pickler, really?
I liked Kelly Pickler.
She had a little career after. A lot of them had careers after they didn't win.
The people who don't win generally do best, I've found.
Chris Daughtry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great example of that. The last person, though, from the weekend that stood out, Mike Martin, Florida State head coach. The Seminoles still haven't lost in the NCAA tournament. They barely got in. This is Mike Martin's last season. He needed to win one game in order to get to 40 wins for the 40th straight season. That's the kind of success they have. He gets back to Omaha after beating LSU and Paul Mainieri's program to get there. They still have not lost, and they win in the ninth inning against Arkansas in the College World Series on Saturday. So that sets up a game tonight, 7 o'clock first pitch, Florida State, Michigan. We're all in on Mike Martin. His last season, you barely get into the field. Go ACC. A wonderful story that you could argue is the best story in sports going right now. The Drive is broadcast live in the law offices of Timothy D. Wellborn Studios. What's the face for, intern Aaron? Aaron, you're giving me a look. Best story in sports. This guy's in his last season. He's in Omaha. They barely got in, and they haven't lost a game.
Yeah, who cares?
I mean, very good. That's the analysis. Very good.
That's it. I mean, we're talking Anthony Davis happening right now. The heavyweight division is on his head right now. And we're talking college baseball. That's the greatest story of sports.
Well, he's the best story in sports. He just so happens to be in college baseball. It's the best story, you know? Not the biggest story, the best. Like, the Anthony Davis story is not finished yet. It just started. It was breaking news.
Whenever people talk about college baseball, all I hear is this tink, and it ruins everything for me.
The aluminum bat. You're not in on the aluminum bat.
They kill me every time.
Wait, really? I love the guy who's just in on watching. I love the image. Aaron is sitting there. I'm here for college baseball. I'm excited. And then he turns the channel in rage because he hears the tink, tink.
That is literally what happens.
Ting.
The announcer's all serious. He's talking about the 2-1 count. Here comes the pitch. I'm drawn in and you get tink. It's terrible.
Can I finish this read now?
Go for it. All right.
Learn more about Tim Welborn and the ways that can help you at timwelborn.com. You'll know when you need us. Things getting crazy in the law offices of Timothy D. Welborn Studios. Tink. On the way. He's back. This is the Sports Hub. You're on the drive.
Oh, look who's back.
This is the Sports Hub at AM 600, AM 920. Now back to the drive with Josh Graham.
Since it was the 25-year anniversary of the murders of Ron Goldman and Nicole Brown Simpson, I found myself watching a lot of OJ stuff over the weekend. It's a lull in the schedule now that the NBA season's over. You had some golf. The draft's coming up later this week. The Anthony Davis news, there's a lot to consume there, and we'll get to that in a second. But I didn't subscribe. I haven't subscribed to ESPN Plus yet, so I haven't watched. I didn't watch the OJ Made in America documentary series, which I still believe is the best thing ESPN's ever done. Like, if I'm going to the table with ESPN's OJ Made in America series, directed by Ezra Edelman, can you beat me in terms of something that they've produced? A lot of people, in terms of influence on sports media, would go to Pardon the Interruption, that show, and the influence it's had, everybody trying to recreate what Mike Wilbon and Tony Kornheiser have done. Tony Kornheiser, a guest on today's show, by the way. He's going to be inducted into the NSMA Hall of Fame, and we look forward to catching up with the ESPN great. But I'd put OJ Made in America over anything else, but I haven't subscribe to ESPN Plus yet, so I was caught watching the FX series, the entire thing, The People versus O.J. Simpson. I watched all of those episodes, binged it again, haven't seen it since it was first on the air. Then I saw that O.J. Simpson created a Twitter account and started putting out videos. Real quickly, tell me the people that O.J. Simpson is following. I understand he's following about a half dozen people. He sent out 3 tweets. And I don't think he's going away anytime soon. O.J. Simpson, he's still very relevant with the documentary series, with the FX show, with the Kardashians and their fame. O.J.'s still very much a part of the landscape socially today. Yes, Des.
So we found who's he's following.
Give me the complete list.
He's following 8 people and or entities.
Oh, he added 2 over the last day.
The PGA Tour. The Buffalo Bills, the NFL, Tim Graham, poor fellow, whoever that is.
Tim Graham, isn't that he's a Buffalo Bills writer.
He does have a Bills cover.
Yeah. Imagine the reaction Tim Graham gets to find out he has a follow. He's being followed by O.J. Simpson. It's the scariest possible thing
yeah.
to know you're being followed by O.J. Simpson.
That was exactly my thought. Like, what if you, Josh, because you're on Twitter a lot more than I am. What if you're sitting around one day and you're like, let me go just go see who's following me. And you just randomly see that O.J. Simpson is following you.
I'm not even just talking about Twitter. You just don't want to be followed by O.J. Simpson.
The juice is loose on Twitter.
What else? Who
USC
else?
USC football, the Heisman Trophy.
Oh, of course.
Some poor soul named Justin Simpson,
that's
who may be a son.
That is a son.
And Malcolm Laverne.
That's some poor soul named Justin.
Another poor fella getting followed by the juice.
He's
probably his attorney. He's a Nevada attorney.
All these are very logical follows, though, if you think about it.
They all check out. Did he lose his Heisman Trophy? Is he trying to get it back?
That was one of the things he went to prison for. He was trying to get his sports memorabilia back.
That was actually on his side for that one. That would make kind of sense to me.
Yeah. That checks out. Let's hear O.J. Simpson's first tweet. I'm sure nothing controversial is going to come out of this.
Hey, Twitter world, this is yours truly. Now, coming soon to Twitter, you'll get to read all my thoughts and opinions on just about everything. Now, there's a lot of fake O.J. accounts out there. So this one, at the real OJ32, is the only official one. So this should be a lot of fun. I got a little getting even to do. Oh. So God bless. Take care.
I got a little getting even to do.
I got a little getting even to do.
Yeah.
What is that about?
O.J. Simpson's got to get even.
Let's start right there.
Oh, no, baby.
No.
Does that mean he's going to kill people in even numbers? Like, I already got two, allegedly. Well, I might add two more.
Well, remember, he said he was going to find the real killers, right? So
he's
still got that.
Him.
It's been 25 years. He's got some.
How many suspects are out there?
His life's mission.
I got a little getting even to do.
Yes.
Sounds it like he says it all scary, too. Mm-hmm.
Gosh.
Wow.
What else does he have here? This is great. I'm looking at the visual of this. He looks like an ultimate dad. He has a Hawaiian t-shirt on. And I love that he opens it up with "Hello, Twitter world" every time he talks. Let's hear more from the Chews.
Hey, Twitter world! You know, for years people have been able to say whatever they want to say about me, with no accountability. But now I get to challenge a lot of that BS and set the record straight. More importantly, I'll be able to talk about everything, especially sports, fantasy football, and even politics. But for now, let me just say, to my fellow fathers out there, happy Father's Day. God bless.
I can't think of a better messenger out there in the way of accountability and wishing fathers a happy Father's Day, a better voice in messenger than O.J. Simpson's.
Hey, Twitter world.
Hey, what's going on? Yeah, what's going on, guys? Hey, Twitter world.
I just thought of a match for our WSJS Super Showdown.
Before you say that. Listen to what this man is saying.
Oh, I know.
I know. It's
people,
crazy.
People need to be held accountable.
Exactly.
O.J. Simpson.
Man, I can't.
O.J. Simpson put out a video with the central message being there are people out there who need to be accountable for their actions, and he closed it. Again, somebody who's known notoriously as being one of the worst dads you can be, wishing everybody a happy Father's Day. So much self-awareness lacking in just that video alone. But here's the thing. I don't think he's going away. He's good at this. He's good on camera. He's good at speaking in content. And he is still an ultimate showman. Hertz commercials and television and sports analysis. He's going to become a television commentator. It's somebody is going to bring O.J. Simpson on. I don't know what it's going to be. It might be Sports Alex Jones or Sports InfoWars.
Wow.
I don't know. He might create his own outlet. Something is going to happen. Maybe Barstool's going to hire them because they don't care about women.
That makes sense.
Allegedly. 336-777-1600 on Twitter at Sports Hub Triad. He's going to be prevalent when sports season gets here. When football season gets here. I don't know what sports season is.
How long before OJ and President Trump cross paths on Twitter?
Oh, no.
Twitter beef.
Yeah.
That's not going to be a Twitter beef. They're going to be best pals.
See, it can go either way.
They both like to golf.
They love each other.
They do. Yeah, well, I think Trump is smart enough not to associate with him, but who knows? We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. But I am interested in what's going to happen, how people are going to continue to follow this man, because we're talking about it on the radio now. It is still trending today. Every time he puts out a video, we're all watching this. He's still very relevant in a way that's a little eerie.
Hey, Twitter world.
Hey, what's going on, Twitter world?
I mean, there's a part. I'm following him, by the way.
I am too.
Because I have a morbid sense of something when it comes to Twitter that I follow the most random bad people you could probably follow just to know what's going on. So I'm not surprised when something happens. Like, oh, well, I saw that on his Twitter like 2 days ago, so that didn't really surprise me. I think OJ. I think OJ had a poor choice of words.
I think he said it the way he did. He said exactly what he meant to say.
He did.
That's still a poor choice of words.
But he created headlines, right? Like, he's trying to do the Irvin Magic Johnson move, where I'm famous, I'm going to put out a video and say nothing. I'm going to put out a tweet it lacks any type of substance, but since I'm Magic Bleepin' Johnson, it's going to get retweets and people are going to talk about it, so much so that I'm going to be reaffirmed to do it time and time again. OJ tried to do that thing. Wish you a happy Father's Day. Hey, I'm going to do NFL fantasy football content. I can't wait to hear what that's going to sound like.
Oh, my gosh.
Listen here. I mean, if you're a player, do you want OJ giving you their praise? Hey, listen here. I'll tell you, this player reminds me a lot of me. No.
Oh,
juice,
man, I'm good.
Juice.
I'm good.
It's thanks, but no thanks.
Well, how many followers did he pick up when did this open up? Because we talked about this Saturday morning.
So
he opened it Saturday morning. How many followers has he picked up in 2 days?
I mean, can I guess?
Yeah.
I bet you he's probably over 20,000 followers.
Mm. That's a healthy number, right?
I bet you he's over 20,000 followers at the moment. That might be lowballing it, considering how much this has been talked about and who O.J. Simpson
If I'm following him and I'm not really on Twitter like that, but I made a point to go follow him, I think it might be higher than that.
He has 665,000.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. In 2 days?
It's O.J. Simpson.
Wow.
It encouraged me to watch documentaries and shows on O.J. Simpson.
You might be onto something, man. This might be the way for O.J. to
he's going to make a comeback.
Raise that money to...
The juice is loose.
I'm worried about the kid in Buffalo who just this offseason got clearance to play to where OJ's 32.
Hmm.
That's right.
The former Louisville running back who's going to be wearing OJ's number this year. Pretty excited about it. You are listening to WSGS Winston-Salem, WCOG Greensboro, WPC in Burlington, and WMFR High Point. This is the Triads Sports Hub.
Listen up, everybody.
There has been a lot of talk.
This is the Sports Hub at AM 600, AM 920. Now back to the Drive with Josh Graham.
Tony Kornheiser of ESPN spending some time with us now. Next week, he's going to be right here in the Triad. At about this time next week, we're going to be broadcasting at the NSMA Hall of Fame dinner. And Tony Kornheiser this year is going to be elected into the National Sports Media Association Hall of Fame. So, Tony, it's good to have you on in the Triad. I understand you're going to come down here, play some golf, and then have a lot of people say nice things about you.
Yeah, I don't know about a lot of people. One or two might. It would be a change in my career if a lot of people said nice things. But it's a very, very nice honor. And I'm thrilled because I'm going to bring my son with me, and he will introduce me. And I assume he's just going to skewer me for a few minutes, and that will make me laugh and make me happy.
I hear you're going to play Pinehurst next week. We were just talking, and you said that you've played the course a number of times. What sticks out about some of the golf courses you've played in this area?
Well, let's see what I've played in that area. I've played Pinehurst. I've played Pine Needles. I've played Mid-South. I think those are the three that I've played in that area right around Pinehurst. What stands out is I'm a terrible player. I'm a 20. So if I par a hole, I'm ecstatic for the rest of the round. And everybody wants to play Pinehurst too. And my son, who is a pretty good golfer, is very excited about playing the redo on Pinehurst 4. He wants to see that. He's a fan of Gil Hanse, who did the redo. And the two, what sticks out of two, is you hit a shot that you think is pretty good, and it gets on the green, and the green is crowned, and it rolls off by 35 feet, and you scream and curse Donald Ross, and I think that's what makes everybody happy.
During the NBA Finals, we saw President Obama attend a game, and he saw your partner in crime, your co-host, Michael Wilbon, and he alleged...
fantastic. The quote is fantastic. It made me laugh out loud when I saw it.
He alleged that Wilbon was ducking him in golf and that he was stuck with you all these times.
Yeah, yeah. That really made me laugh. A bunch of people sent it to me, right? A bunch of people sent it on the phone, and I looked at it, and I laughed, and I showed it to my wife, who played it nonstop about 115 times. Because a lot of people say when you're on a first-name basis, that's cool, but both Mike and I felt that being on a last-name basis with 44 was extremely cool. I got a great kick out of that. I have indeed played with him a few times, yes.
How do those rounds generally go, though, in terms of conversation, competition, and, I mean, does the competitive juices come out of the president?
Okay, so one of the reasons I get to play is because I don't talk about it publicly. So I will say a couple of things. One, he's a very good player. You know, he's quite a good player. There is no shot on the course that is daunting for him. He's long enough to pretty much hit anything. And one of the things that we do very regularly, Mike and I, is he loves sports. And in that regard, he is no different from George W. Bush and Bill Clinton, who also, I think it's fair to say, found refuge in sports because you're going to watch CNN all the time. These guys watch ESPN and they watch games and they like sports. And it's one of the ways you get elected in America is when you have that sort of mass appeal, and mass appeal, I think, is sports to a large degree. So we talk about sports, talk about the NBA a lot, talk about the NFL, talk about baseball. He's a White Sox fan, not a Cubs fan, which always irks Wilbon because Wilbon is a Cubs fan. And the rounds go pretty quickly, and there is a lot to talk about. I wouldn't bring up, we don't bring up politics. What's really the point in that?
President Obama on this station came on the air after Dean Smith passed away because he simply wanted to talk about Coach Smith and Carolina basketball. He gave him the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And I remember running into 44 earlier this year at the Duke North Carolina game in Cameron.
Oh, yeah. What a great seat he had. Wow.
He was right there next to...
What a great seat he had. Do you think he had an in on that? Really? Okay.
It was an amazing thing to see otherwise just mega celebrities look like normal peasants when Obama walks in. You have Spike Lee and Todd Gurley and Greg Olson and Ken Griffey Jr., and nobody's paying attention to these guys because 44 sits there, and there's a photographer who's been shooting the ACC for decades named Robert Crawford sitting right in front of him. And every time I looked over at Obama, he was tapping him on the shoulder and asking him questions, it seemed like, throughout the game. So I talked to Robert. What was Obama asking you about? And he would just say, man, what are some of your favorite games that you've shot here? What are some of the things you could tell me about Zion? So on and so forth. With you being on the golf course with him and spending significant time with him, and like you said, last name basis, what is his interest level? What things does he ask you about in the world of sports?
He really, truly loves basketball more than the others. He played it about until, I guess, 3 or 4 years ago when then you're in pickup games. And then at every single pickup game, somebody over 50 tears an Achilles. they just leave the court, and I guess you get worried about that. I remember that Duke game. I saw him. And so I immediately sent an email out to one of his guys, this guy Joe Paulson, who's a very close aide. And I said, how'd you get that seat? Come on, that seat is great. He loves the NBA, and he also loves college basketball, and I suspect he loves high school basketball. I mean, that's the sport he knows best and likes best, but he knows them all. He knows them all. And as you can imagine, it's a great honor to play with him. And he plays with athletes. I mean, he's played with a bunch of athletes played golf. He really likes to do it. I know that a couple of his favorites are Ray Allen and Steph Curry. I mean, he thinks Steph Curry's really good, you know, and 44 likes to play with him. So
ESPN's Tony Kornheiser with us. He's going to be inducted into the NSMA Hall of Fame at this time next week. It's a weird thing because in our studio here, the law offices of Timothy D. Wellborn Studios, I see Tony Kornheiser on my TV screen, and I'm talking to Tony Kornheiser right now, too. But in thinking
of bizarre, and you should turn away from that because that's probably, at my age, that's probably horrifying.
Thinking about your show, I almost feel like your show was meant to be a podcast when the way that it's done, it's 30 minutes of just pure sports. It keeps you up to date, and it is one of the more popular sports podcasts that are out there. And I wonder, when you see how these shows are put together now, considering what it was when it first started, PTI, what do you think the biggest influence your show's had on today's sports media?
I don't think it has to do with us. I don't think it has to do with Mike and me. I think it has the format, you know, the stuff on the right-hand side of the screen, the rundown, the fact that we do it very quickly, the fact that we don't belabor points and we're not out there, you know, at some sort of glacial pace for 5 and 6 minutes on a story. It's got to be quick, and I think that suits people. Mike once told me that he felt that our show was a daily digest of the sports news you had to have, and I think that's probably true, and it's sustained us over, a very, very long time, much to our surprise and shock, considering the roots of our careers. And we're both very grateful for that, but I'm not saying anybody could do it. You know, I don't want to be falsely modest. We're pretty good. And we've known each other a long time, and we worked with each other for 20 years before we ever did this. But I think the number one thing are the visuals and the way Eric Rideholm, the producer of it, changed the way sports was delivered. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think just the way it looks, you see every other show that's put out there tries to recreate a little bit of what that is, at least from what it looks like.
Great flattery, and we're very happy about that.
Yeah, and you get to all the big stories. Of course, the big one today that everybody's talking about, Anthony Davis traded to the Los Angeles Lakers, and July 1st is coming up. When you look at the biggest stories approaching July 1st in NBA free agency, what player's decision on July the 1st do you think will have the biggest impact on what we see in the fall and winter?
Well, I would have told you last week it was Kevin Durant, but he's not going to play. And I don't know what effect that has on his particular decision, but he will sit out, I'm sure, the entire year. So I'm not, you know, I don't think that has any particular effect. The people at Golden State were probably planning for him to leave. Now I think there's a better chance that he will stay than there was, let's say, 3 weeks ago. I don't think the Kyrie Irving thing is a big deal now because, you know, even if he and Durant go to the same place, it's not going to happen next year. I assume that the Kawhi Leonard thing will be the single biggest signing by a lot, but putting Anthony Davis with LeBron James, particularly in a league where the Warriors will be weakened by what happened to Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant.
Well, Tony, we look forward to having you in these parts at this time next week. Congratulations on being a Hall of Famer for the National Sports Media Association, and we look forward to meet week.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
You got it. That's Tony Kornheiser of ESPN, and pardon the interruption, going to be inducted into the National Sports Media Association's Hall of Fame next week right here in the Triad in Winston-Salem. We're going to be broadcasting our show from the NSMA next Monday afternoon. We're certainly looking forward to that. Tony Kornheiser was talking about, of course, his experiences with the president, and as we mentioned, Obama was on these radio waves. President Obama, when Dean Smith passed away, was willing to do an interview with David Glenn. And the reason why is because he loves basketball so much. And he gave him the Presidential Medal of Freedom a few months before Dean Smith passed away in February, 5 or 6 years ago. And I think he was meeting with the German Chancellor Angela Merkel that day. So he couldn't officially iron down a time or if he could even come on at all. So everybody's trying to get Roy Williams that day to talk about his former head coach that he was an assistant for, the current North Carolina basketball coach. He was the big get. Everybody wanted to speak with Roy Williams that day. David Glenn got him, but as fate would have it, during the time you're speaking with Roy Williams during a three-hour radio show is the only time President Obama could speak on the air. It was the only time he had free in his schedule. So, of course, you're going to go to President Obama. Only problem is Roy Williams is talking, and everybody wants Roy that day. David handled it about as well as you could. He interrupted Coach Williams to say, under any circumstance, we'd love to have you on this show. There's no time we would turn away. Roy Williams, you're always welcome here. But the leader of the free world's waiting on the other line, so we're going to have to let you go. Coach Williams understood that and said, you're making the right decision, David. So a pretty neat moment there. You are listening to The Drive. It's brought to you in part by our friends at Twin Peaks Restaurant. Find them Haynesball Boulevard and Winston-Salem. It's your local sports lodge. Twin Peaks eats, drinks, scenic views. If you miss any of our shows, you can find the best of podcasts available on SoundCloud, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher. Some of these things, I don't even know if they're real things. Like, you're telling me that Stitcher's a thing. I don't know for sure that it is, but it's on this piece of paper. So I guess I'll believe it. Anywho, we've got Ticket to the House stories to get to. And we'll take it to the house next.